Good afternoon. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Happy National Indigenous Peoples Day. We're going to talk a little bit about that later with Indigenous artist Corey Parkin. Fun lineup of guests today. A lot of guests today. This is how you know I'm running out of steam doing three shows a day this week. The Jays lose last night, 8-7. They run out of steam in their comeback. It's another comeback that falls short. It's another poor outing from their starter, this time Jose Berríos. It's another tax day for the bullpen. One small piece of positive news comes in today. Maybe it ups the vibes. Alejandro Kirk, way ahead of everyone in the All-Star voting for the American League catcher spot. Something like 670,000 votes ahead. He's third in overall voting. So good job to Jays fans. Alejandro Kirk has been the best catcher in the American League so far this year. It's nice that your votes have reflected that. You can text us throughout the show, 590-590. Tweet any questions to me at Blake Murphy ODC. Either of those are fine. We have many guests today. Maybe we don't get to a ton of them. I don't really know. But we'll have Matt Muse later, which I'm really excited about. He's a Chicago area rapper who's a huge White Sox fan. We've got Darren Jackson, former Blue Jay, who is the radio color commentator for the White Sox. Corey Parkin, as I mentioned, Indigenous artist who did that really, really cool alternate Jays jersey and logo mock-up that you surely saw on social media. And right now, if you need to explain why Jose Berríos is up and down, explain why Kevin Gausman is up and down, and explain why Raimel Tapia can suddenly hit opposite field home runs, you need
Numbers without context mean nothing. You cannot walk a lot of guys and have poor command. They can differentiate themselves from every other team in baseball if they lean into this. I fully agree that this is an advantage for them. Obviously, small sample size. It's alarm bells, red flag, whatever you want to call it. I'd love to see the metrics on that as well. Oh, that slider broke 7 inches. Is that good? I don't know.
I need you to explain it.
Explain it, Chris Black.
Oh, boy. It is Tuesday at 3 o'clock, which means we're joined by Sportsnet producer Chris Black. How's it going, buddy?
I'm doing very well. I'm no longer embarrassed by that. It's just I can't stand hearing my own voice. But I hear that comes with radio.
Yeah, I hate my own voice as well. And I have the benefit of the one Derek made for me for the Raptor show with William Liu, the Blake Murphy Tuesday drop. My voice isn't in it, thankfully. So I don't have to feel that out. Someone who probably appreciates their own voice more because it's a much smoother radio and television voice. And he's always right, as it turns out. Analyst at Sportsnet and Blue Jays Central, it's Joe Siddall. Joe, how are you?
Blake, it's not my voice I like hearing. I like hearing Black's voice when he's got these genius ideas.
I don't know about that. He's trying to disrupt what's been one of the better defenses in baseball. He's trying to do a whole bunch of stuff we don't like. I don't know. What I was going to ask you first, right, when we came on, I want to talk about Raimel Tapia later, but if you could do like a Blake Murphy breakdown so I have a really good night, it seems like you willed that one to happen yesterday.
You talking Tapia now?
Yeah. You did that.
Well, I, you know, Chris and I chat away. He's producing our shows when he's on schedule, so we'll chat in the mornings. Any ideas? Bounce some things off. So he bounced a couple things off me. I bounced a couple things off him, and then we see that Tapia is in the lineup, and we're saying, let's go with that. I said, you know, here's a guy that's hot, and not that I've been waiting for him to pick it up offensively, but it's just I've noticed some things this year that are different than what he did in Colorado, and Chris noticed them too. But I don't want to say I wasn't really in love with the changes yet. I was watching him for a little while, and honestly, that was my feeling. So I'm like, wow, I'm kind of watching. Yeah, he's making some changes. Yeah, he's keeping the ball off the ground a little bit more, but still not in love with the swing. It still looks like he's trying to create and launch at times and pull off balls. But he's been better lately. Let's take a look at some slow-mos. And this is where Chris is at his best, when he can find me the rolls, the viz, and slow things down and show the comparisons next to one another. I can't even sniff doing that stuff. So that's where his expertise comes in. And we keep chatting and we see all these different things. And it makes for a segment on our show. So we had a little fun with it. And then the best part of it all is when you do a demo, Blake, and then in the second inning and Tapia's first at bat, he goes deep. we just kick our pom poms up in the air and say yes. But it was pretty fun.
The other element too, though, is to give everyone a peek behind the curtain, if somebody's going well, it's like, we should probably talk about him, because in baseball, there's invariably a cold streak coming. So it's, hey, we should do this segment now before he cools off.
See, that's one way to do it. But the other way is to look for the guy who's cold, knowing that most of the time they'll turn around. And then you can take credit of, oh, look, we diagnosed the problem and he fixed it.
Well, see, Blake's already a better producer than us.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So I do want to ask, I was going to ask about Tapia. We'll just do it quickly, because I know he's not the big story from yesterday, but he does have 11 extra base hits in his last 19 games that he's started. He's hit much better in general. And Chris, I know you noticed something with his ability to go the other way.
Yeah. So on the weekend, what I said to Joe when we were in studio was the most impressive hit I saw was when he stayed back on a Jameson Taillon changeup and hit it the other way and actually drove it. It wasn't just a little grounder the other way. It was a hit to the wall. It was a double. What I didn't realize until I dove into the numbers was he actually goes the other way quite a bit, dating back to his time in Colorado. So that type of power, that's always been a bit of a, I don't know, a canary in the coal mine or whatever. But when somebody is driving the ball the other way, that is always kind of a tip to me that, oh, he's seeing it well. He's patient. He's willing to stay back and let the ball travel. I know that's an overused term, especially around the Blue Jays, but that's always a good sign to me if I see a guy driving the ball the other way. So to me, that is maybe a sign that, hey, that could be, or this could be a little bit more than just another flash in the pan or just another weak hot streak.
We did hear when they acquired him that maybe there was some stuff they thought they could unlock if he could stop hitting everything on the ground all the time. Joe, have you noticed any changes in his swing or his approach that would suggest he's trying to hit the ball in the air a little bit more to be able to drive it with authority?
Well, absolutely. That's what we went over in that demo, is the swing mechanics are so different. And last year, you didn't really see like a coil or a load, as hitters will talk about. And what that is, it gets you coiled up so that you can then stride and stay behind the baseball. I always find, and there are some hitters in Blue Jays lineup to do it right now, but there are guys that if you don't get a coil or a real good negative move where you're loading that back hip, the only move you're going to make is going forward. And anytime you're going forward, you're going to have a tough time with velocity, because you're kind of going into that fastball and it gets on you in a hurry. And then the other thing is, you're going to have a tough time picking up spin. So anytime it's just that forward move, and we call it a drift forward, whatever you want to call it, but when you're going forward so much, it's okay. Everybody's going to go forward. But if you don't get that coil and it's just forward and you're kind of sliding your hips forward, it's hard to stay back with that coil in your hip, and also to get that barrel turn deep. So all of those things now become more forward. And anytime things in hitting are more forward, that's going to make you susceptible to rolling over, topping balls and hitting balls into the ground. And last year he didn't have that. He didn't have a real coil. It was that drift forward. I think when you look at the trade and what we heard from the Blue Jays, yeah, you certainly see a lot of really good things if you can clean up some mechanics. It looks as though, I don't know what process has happened with hitting coaches or if he's doing it or whatever, but the swing is different. And I would only say at times it's a work in progress, because we still see him try to create. And what I mean by that is, you know, we hear the word launch in baseball so much anymore. It's like trying to work under the ball and launch it in the air, as opposed to allowing your good swing mechanics to drive the ball by catching it out front and being behind it and driving it in the air.
So that's what went well yesterday. Most things went poorly. The White Sox were able to sit back and drive Jose Berríos' curveball very, very well. So we'd been worried about the fastball command, the dip in fastball velocity, the one start, the ability to locate the fastball in general. Almost gets lost in those couple of starts where he was searching for the fastball, that when he's at his best, that's a setup pitch for the curveball. Chris, I know you were very displeased with the results on the curveball yesterday.
Well, I'm not necessarily displeased.
You're not his dad.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you're not, the start down off the fridge.
Yeah, I get paid either way. But what I started looking at was his break on his curveball, breaking ball, slider. I think it's more like a slurvy pitch almost. But when you look game by game at the horizontal break on his breaking ball, it tells a story. So last night it was 14 inches. When it's good, it's like 17 or 18. So we're talking like a 4-inch difference on the curve. So that's, you know, that's a quarter of the plate. So that's a big difference when you're talking, if it starts on the inside corner of the plate, we're talking, is it getting all the way across? Or is it breaking just to the middle of the plate?
And that's not only the break for the deception, but that affects his command because he expects it to break this amount. So you start the pitch here, and then not only is it not breaking as much, so it's easier to hit and track, but it's not going where he wants to go.
Yeah, so it was actually Joe that pointed it out when we were watching.
You guys are such a good team.
Well, such a good team. We'll see about when we're on the golf course in a couple of days.
I was going to say that.
But he noticed that he was going away from his curveball. So that's what made me look at, is the curveball not performing the way he wants? So then I went back, looked at it, all his game logs since joining the Jays, and the stat that kind of jumps out is when the breaking ball is breaking 14 inches or less, his ERA is above 7. And if it's all like, and that to me, like, there's really nothing else you need to even break down. It's when his breaking ball's good, he's good. When the breaking ball's not moving, he doesn't perform. He doesn't get swing and miss. His other perches aren't as effective. So it might even be a case where, like, his breaking ball sets up everything else. The fact that it's such a good pitch, and when it's good, he's good. Like, case closed, shut the book, he'll be fine. But when it's not breaking, like last night, he needs to try and find other solutions. Sometimes he can, but last night he didn't.
So, Joe, he didn't find the other solutions last night, and it has seemed like that's a bit of a trend this year that, he has it snowball on him sometimes. And maybe that's just, you know, if you don't have your breaking ball, you don't have your fastball, it's hard to find solutions. But is there something you'd like Berríos to change when things start to get away from him so he can still grind you out maybe five plus innings on those days he doesn't have it?
Well, that's normally who he is, right? I mean,
yeah.
when he came to the Blue Jays, we thought like a bad day for Jose Berríos when he came from the Twins was like he'll go 5 innings and 3 runs, but he never really blows up. That's kind of been his reputation, but now we're starting to see some blow-ups. I think a game like last night, I'm trying to picture myself behind the plate last night, and what he did is he went heavy to his sinker, and he was pounding the sinkers at his all right-handed hitting lineup aside from McGuire, and he kept pounding in. Now, going back to the curveball, they weren't necessarily like horribly located at times, like Vaughn's double in the first. It was down, but you could see it backed up and just stayed there, not getting that horizontal break that Chris is referring to. So that's not his good breaking ball. The one to Harrison, it backed up, hung in or half. Mm-hmm. But then what he did is he just stayed with the sinking fastball inside to righties. Well, what do you think Robert did when he came up in the third? Oh, fastball in there. So I'm just thinking, you have to adapt a little bit here. I don't mind using that sinker into righties, of course, but I thought he should have used the other side of the plate a little bit more too, because then at least you've got them thinking both sides. If you can get a hitter thinking both sides of the plate, and then I think you can still get away with a bad breaking ball once in a while if you do that, but it just seemed like they were so dead set on staying with the sinker, and it wasn't his good sinker. You know, when he's got his good sinker, it's got that good movement. So much like he didn't have his best curveball last night, I don't think he had his best sinker as well. But hate to belabor my point. You know, Chris and I have talked about this, but I just, when you have an experience behind the plate, and I'm not saying a veteran catcher helps Berríos through that last night, but a young kid back there, how are you supposed to go to Jose Berríos and say, hey, do this? Trust me here. I've got you. It's hard to do when you have young catchers back there.
And you haven't been through it with him. It's not only the age, it's the experience as a duo where we see, you know, I know the Jays don't like to do pitcher catcher partnerships, but we saw it with Jansen and Ryu a little bit, and we've seen it with Manoah and Kirk pretty consistently now. So I do wonder if they go back to Kirk, because Kirk at least has a bit more experience with Berríos. And then it does make you, you know, obviously we've all been very excited about Moreno, and especially his ability to put the bat on the ball and come through with hits. But yeah, maybe that's the thing that's tougher to touch. It's tougher to quantify, Joe, that maybe there's a cost there. There's also the cost, obviously, the way things have been going, to the Blue Jays bullpen. So I use that as a pivot point, because Kevin Gausman, for the first chunk of the season, was a guy who could save the bullpen. It was him and Manoah you could expect 7 from, and that was, you know, the way you structured your rotation. You had those guys separated, so those were days you figured would be lighter bullpen days. Well, The last time out for Gausman wasn't a good time. Berríos has a short one. You have Stripling coming up after that. So you need something out of Gausman tonight. He hasn't been particularly great of late. Chris, when I take a look at his recent starts, and I hate doing this in a big picture way, because if it happens enough, you're contributing something to it. But it does seem like Gausman, on top of not being able to locate the splitter last time out and throwing it more inside instead of below the zone, he's had some pretty poor fortune of late.
Yeah, 100%. Now, it's funny to take us to again, give it another peek behind the curtain. Like the night before a start, kind of as that game is winding down, Joe and I, we both start looking towards the next starter. And I just take a look at the hits the guy's given up of late. You know, what kind of pitches was he allowing them against? And with Gausman, there's been so much going on. We've been talking about, is he tipping? Joe was great on that a couple weeks ago. We've been talking about his fastball location. That I think we were kind of, one of the things we were forgetting is like, when you look at the hits he was giving up, they weren't hard hits. Wasn't giving up a lot of home runs. There wasn't a bunch of balls off the wall. When you go back and look at these three starts in June, he's getting nickel and dimed a lot. It's a lot of ground balls through the infield. It's a lot of flares popping over infielders. It's a lot of balls just kind of going down the line, but over the third baseman. He's been really unlucky. Now, one way of looking at this, his ERA is 6.75. When you look at fielding independent pitching, it's like sub three. So that kind of stuff led me to start looking at what is going on here. And is there something kind of that we've been missing so far when we've been paying so much attention to how Gausman is pitching? Are we missing something with what hitters are doing against him?
Yeah, and that's an interesting one. And Joe, I know you have some thoughts on that. When you see what Chris is pointing out, but it's happened multiple starts in a row, at what point do you start to shift from, well, he had a unlucky start, or he got, you know, that was bad sequencing in that one. That could have been a much better start. But then it's 3-4 starts in. Like, at what point does it tilt for you to, well, he's doing something to cause that, or he's responsible for that in some way more than just, you know, batted ball luck?
Well, I think it, like when he referred to the twin start there, I think that's when this whole thing pivoted for him. And it feels to me in watching that he's almost in his own head a little bit now, because that alerted him that, okay, maybe he wasn't, whether he was tipping or not, but the point being is that something alerted hitters where they're laying off that split down and they're teeing off on the fastball up. The old, you know, if it's low, let it go. If it's high, let her fly. And the Twins were doing that. But the start against Detroit was a bit of a rebound. But is that a fair rebound? It's the worst offense in baseball. So then you look at that Baltimore start, and there it was again. But the splitter, it looked to me like he was trying to make sure that he used his fastball down in the zone, because if they're going to lay off up, I got to make sure I throw some fastballs down. And I remember talking to him earlier in the year about that. And with that, though, I'm watching that game, and I told Chris there's a couple times the catcher's got the high target, and he missed his location down, and then he looks frustrated. So was he trying to go high, or is he trying to pitch low more? You know, the catcher doing these decoys at times now. So it's almost like he's doing way too much overthinking right now, and I think he needs to get back to being who he is. And I think if you do that tonight, it'll be interesting to see what the results are. And if indeed what Chris is saying is, you know, maybe the hitters are thinking he throws the split so much that maybe they're thinking, try to see the split as a hitter. If I see it, let it go. Sure. But if it's a fastball, I can still get to it. And maybe that's why you're getting some ground balls and some balls through shifts and the other way, and kind of that bad ball luck that he's not getting. So it makes sense, but I think he really needs to get back to being who he is tonight. And that's that high fastball guy, splitter down.
I'm glad you mentioned the shifts, Joe, because I do look at some of the recent results and wonder if something that will help Gausman stop overthinking and something that will help the results, even if he's not pitching dramatically differently, is this is a team that shifts, at last time I checked, more than any other team in baseball, pretty aggressively as well. So by volume and degree of shift, maybe, Chris, one size doesn't fit all when it comes to shifting each pitcher in your rotation.
Yeah, so Jays have been the most aggressive team in baseball shifting. It's helped them transform into a top 10 defense, and I am like fully hand up all for it. Like,
it's
it
your
is,
fault.
It is a good thing. It is a good thing that they're shifting, but I think it can't be a one size fits all, as you said. Gausman is unique. What Joe just alluded to, I think the fastball split combination, I think it really makes hitters, as he said, really kind of take an extra split second. Is this a splitter? Is it a fastball? And so one of the things that when I dove into the numbers, he's a bottom five, bottom 10 guy in terms of pulled ground balls. So lots of people, when they hit ground balls against him, go the other way. But still, the Jays are an aggressive shifting team in the infield with Gausman. They're shifting like 65% of the time in the infield when Gausman's in there. Now, one of the ways that's kind of affected them, last year, 230 opponent average on ground balls. The year before that, 226. This year, it's 340. So that's one of the highest opponent averages on grounders in baseball. When you look at outs above average behind them, it's -9. That's the third worst in baseball, or third
lowest.
And
you certainly don't expect that with Chapman and Espino in your infield.
Yeah, so when some people hear that and they think, oh, bad defense behind them, but it's actually just like a way of turning batted balls into outs. So it's when they look at where the ball is hit, how it's hit, is it on the ground, exit velo, are they turning those into outs? So shifting goes into that number. And to me, I think it's shifting that's kind of hurting them. I think with Gausman on the mound, they need to be a little more conservative in how they deploy infield shifts.
Joe, is the splitter low just an easier pitch to take the other way anyway and try to beat a shift with? Not because, you know, maybe what I'm thinking is maybe there's an acknowledgement from the hitters that, well, this isn't something I'm going to be able to drive, but it's something that maybe I can poke. Is there anything to that with the splitter's movement and where Gausman locates it?
Well, I don't think it's so much that you're just trying to poke a ground ball the other way with it. It's that you're trying to see the pitch so long, so deep that that's all that you have left, right? Anytime you wait longer, you're inclined to go the other way with it. And a lot of times that pitch is down to the zone. So if I'm a right-handed batter and I'm thinking that split and I see it down, that swing's going to be a little tardy catching it deep and it's going to be very low and can shoot the other way. Some guys, I'm sure, have steered it over there and done it on purpose. But because the pitch has that downward movement, naturally you're going to get ground balls with it, right? Because you're going to catch the top of the ball and beat it in the ground. Now it's a matter of where the fielders are and where you hit it. But I think Chris could be onto something. And, hey, I think shifts are wonderful, too. We all know that they record more outs than they don't. But I think it's also a case of being able to adapt on the fly using your eyes, but actually using the numbers that Chris just spit out right there. It's almost like, for me, a catcher calling the game. You got a game plan going in with your certain pitcher, but what if he doesn't have his best slider tonight? You got to go to plan B, whatever that might be. Sometimes you got to go to plan C. Point being, you have to adapt on the fly, and I think we've got enough of a sample size now where maybe the Blue Jays need to adapt on the fly here defending with Gausman pitching.
Yeah. Just to answer a little bit the question you just asked, Joe, I dove into, so most of this stuff is on a thread that I posted on Twitter earlier today.
At Down to Black.
At Down to Black, yep. But one of the things, it's actually, people will still roll over the splitter, so they still pull him at a decent rate. It's his fastball that people almost, they're 19% pulled and obviously 81% straight or opposite field. So it's really when guys are trying to stay back, and he busts them with a 97, 96, 98 mile an hour fastball, they are going the other way because they're late on it. So it's really his fat. When he throws a fastball in the zone, guys are really late on it and they're going the other way with it.
So
that makes even more sense, Blake, just because if I'm sitting soft, I'm going to get beat with a fastball and catch it deep. It's going the other way, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Joe, one more quick one for you before we let you go. Kevin Biggio's been back up from AAA for about a month now. 382 OBP, 446 slugging. We're going to get it tested tonight if he's in the lineup to see if he can handle the hard stuff that's given him trouble over the years. Dylan Cease is not going to throw him a lot of soft stuff, but are you starting or have you seen enough from Kevin Biggio to give you some confidence that maybe not exactly where we thought he might end up back in 2019, but that he's back to being a capable, not every day, but 4 or 5 day a week guy for this team?
I will say I think Kevin's capable 4 or 5 days a week because he can play around different positions. He's got a good knowledge of the strike zone. He'll take his walks and give you a pretty good AB. I'm not sold on the velocity. At times, you know, it's middle of the zone. I still think that with his swing mechanics, and I was talking about Tapia earlier, and one of the guys I was referring to that I didn't name was Kevin. He's got that move forward where I think he really works under the baseball. It's going to be tough to catch up to velo. Now, you face good teams like the Yankees, they're going to execute their pitches. You face other teams, they might not execute as well. And I thought the White Sox did a couple of favors last night. But in credit to Kevin, he got it done. And you have to be able to hit pitchers' mistakes because they make a lot of them in the big leagues.
Yeah, the thing I'm most impressed with Kevin is he can sit a couple days and come back in, and that eye never gets – the eye is always there. It's an elite skill. I think people like him get shortchanged in that people don't view – plate discipline as a skill, and it really is. It's just like power, it's just like speed. It is a defined skill, and I'm super impressed that he can kind of sit down, be cold, not play for a couple of days and still have that.
I will say the one thing about that is that it's a skill that its value gets amplified the more other skills you're layering yeah. with it, where, you know, it's one thing to be Russell Martin with a 350 OBP, even as you're not making contact with anything. It's another thing if you can add some power behind that, add some pop, which we've seen from Biggio a little bit the last couple of days. So good to see that. Nice to see some cause for optimism with a couple left-handed bats as we work through what the heck's going on with all these starters. Joe Siddall, Chris Black, thanks so much for taking the time today, guys. Joe, keep up all the great work.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
See you tonight.
Chris, also keep up all the great work. I just didn't want you guys to talk over each other. I didn't want to. That made it sound like I was only giving Joe credit for the good work. But you also keep up the great work, man. I appreciate it.
I'll take back in compliments anytime I can get them.
Yeah. It's look, you're a tag team partner with Joe Siddall. You're going to take what you can get in terms of compliments. He's got the face. He's got the suits. He's got the delivery. He's the public facing guy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You're all right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you next Tuesday to Explain It Black again. And just me and you next week. No Joe. So you can run wild.
Perfect. That's what I need. More time. He's eating up too much of my time here.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back on Jays Talk Plus, former Blue Jays outfielder, 12-year Major League vet, and White Sox radio color analyst Darren Jackson joins us next to take a look at the White Sox on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Great daily gambling advice from JD, Blake, and Ailish in The Fan Morning Show's Wake and Rake. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. We continue this Jays series in Chicago. They dropped the opener last night, 8-7. Look to get back on track tonight as Kevin Gausman takes on Dylan Cease. To help us set this one up, former Blue Jay, 12-year Major League vet, and the White Sox radio color analyst, Darren Jackson. Darren, how are you?
I'm doing well, Blake. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. I got to tell you, your name came up in a trivia note here on Sunday. Did you catch wind of this at all?
Actually, I did see that. I was rather surprised to see it, but I was going through the notes and said, hey, how about that? I did do something positive while I was there.
For anyone who didn't catch it, on Sunday, the Jays hit for the home run cycle, a solo, a two-run, a three-run, and a grand slam all in the same game. The last time they did that, Darren was one of the home run hitters for the team. Darren, do you remember which home run you hit, one, two, three, or four run?
I only remember because I read about it yesterday. So other than that, no, I wouldn't have remembered at all. That was a difficult time in my career. So remembering stuff wasn't that easy.
Understood. You did play 12 years across seven teams. I'm curious. I know you've been with the Sox for a long time now, but you played for both Chicago clubs. I don't know. How did you lean Sox over Cubs? I think you made the right choice. They're a cooler team. They haven't won as recently, but how did that shake out?
Well, I played for, like you said, both sides of town, but I got drafted by the Cubs. I ended up signing as a free agent with the White Sox years later. And in the end, it came back to the two best organizations I had ever worked for were the Blue Jays and the White Sox. I got a chance to come back here and finish my career. And I decided, you know what? That's where I want to be, because when I'm done playing, that's a place I think I should coach, manage, do whatever I'm going to do, and stick around that organization for a long time if I can. As it worked out, I finished my career playing for them. Sorry, I'm catching my breath. I just walked about five stories of stairs. I'm at the ballpark. But I ended up playing in 99 my last year. Opportunity opened up for me to go upstairs and do some TV. I did that for 9 years, and I've been in the radio now for 12.
That's excellent. I'm glad you found a spot there, and always enjoyed you and Hawk together on the TV call in addition to your radio calls. So you've been around this organization a while, and it really did seem like things were picking back up and expectations were rising heading into this year. When you look at where the White Sox are, I think we can agree they've underperformed a little bit, but have the goals changed for this year, or is the bar still is high. They just need to find a way through it.
Yeah, the bar still is high. Talent's here, obviously. Every team deals with injuries and setbacks, underperforming, you name it. Teams are dealing with all kinds of adversity nowadays. But in the end, I think you have to face the fact that this is a very talented team, and it will start shining. It's got to be sooner rather than later. We kind of crunch numbers, and you go, all right, there's 100 games left. You win 60 of the 100, and you're probably in the postseason. That's what you realistically think you can do when you're healthy, and we're getting healthy right now. Just got Tim Anderson back last night, as you would have seen. When he's on the field, he's a game changer. Guys are now finding their swings and their timing, and our pitchers are starting to be a little more under control. They lost it for a while. They're coming back. And so all the little things that kind of lean you in the direction of beating good opponents like the Blue Jays, and we won one down against the Astros, a nemesis of ours that we usually can't even play well against. So things are indicating that we're turning it around right now, and now they just got to maintain this same posture that they're in right now and don't let it go.
And they got to stop losing more guys to the IL. Anderson comes back, and Moncada goes right back on, and half the bullpen's gone. It seemed a little snake-bitten. If you're this front office, how do you navigate that? Because obviously you think that these guys are going to be back at some point, but when you have six or seven key pieces on the IL, it can be a little difficult. So I know you just laid out a great case for keeping the faith and waiting for guys to get back and the bats to heat up. I'm not so worried about the guys who are healthy, because you're right, I think the talent will turn around there. But in terms of the front office over these next 6 weeks, do they have to explore getting help because they can't stay healthy, or do you just kind of have to roll the dice?
Well, the actual game plan is always going to be, as you well know, the last world championship the Blue Jays picked up was picking up key players during the year. And if you're doing that, and the White Sox wholeheartedly thought that this team will be healthy enough, they'd had enough backup, not to see all these guys go down that we have, key players go down, but they thought there was enough backup to get us through. And then, of course, they were going to add special pieces in areas where they knew they had to strengthen. So that is always going to be there. The White Sox had no intention of, you know, the way the roster started opening day, of keeping the exact same roster that we had to play in a World Series. They knew there were going to be some tweaking here and there. The problem is now you can't just panic because everybody's hurt and start tweaking everything. No, no. You've just got to wait this out and hope that you get your healthy stars back and they perform the way they're supposed to. And then still keep that same approach, tweak here, tweak there, and then go deep into the postseason at the right time. In the end, as we've been seeing lately in this game, you go in as a wild card, you got a chance to win a World Series. Teams are proving that to be true now. So if you tweak the right way like the Braves did last year, and the players that you add at the right time can contribute late and in the postseason, boom, just like that, people are going, can you remember how bad they were to start the year? Man, look at them now. They're great. So that's what we're hoping will be the case.
Yeah, that was the Cubs story, too, a couple years back. And, you know, I think that especially when the top of your rotation is as good as the White Sox is, you like your chances in a three-game series. There has been one thing I've read a couple of times now, and there's been some criticism about the job Tony La Russa's done. Obviously, he doesn't control who gets injured and who's available to him, and maybe the walk with the bases loaded thing got a little overblown, but what have you made of the job Tony La Russa's done navigating all this?
You know what? It's unique. It's unique. He is definitely old school approach, but with a modern twist. He takes all the analytics and he looks at them and he gets the information. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily apply it to all situations because, look, in the end, I'm in agreement with him, and most former players are. And I don't mind analytics. I think the numbers are great. I think all the information's there. I think it's useful. But once the game starts, you actually have to just watch what's going on and pay attention. Forget all the analytics and all the stats and say, you know, this guy's just pitching away, away, away. But why is he pitching me in? That makes no sense. Everybody, because you're different than the other guys. You like the ball away, so he's going to pitch you in. Don't go by percentages. So Tony kind of manages by that. He goes by what is going on right now in front of me, and he makes an assessment and an evaluation. Plus, the truth is, I think he still likes to manage, you know. Mm-hmm. It's easy for him to sit back and just give everybody what they want. Oh, put this player at second base. leave that pitcher in longer. He reads all this and hears all this. He can do it and get no problems at all. Everybody be like, oh, he's doing what everybody says. And then he'll be sitting there going, yeah, how's that working out? That didn't work out either. Do I get credit for following your rules, people? So he's a guy that's going to do it his way, because if he's losing his job, it's not going to be one where he says, oh, I was listening to other people and what they thought.
Fair. And you mentioned he got maybe his biggest weapon back yesterday in Tim Anderson, who has, I mean, he's been an exciting player for a long time, but over the last 4 years kind of reached a new level. I believe he has the highest batting average in baseball over that span, mixes in the stolen bases with a little bit of power and a lot of personality to how he plays. You've been around the Chicago market for a fair amount of time now. How big is Tim Anderson's star in Chicago? Is this close to as popular as you've seen a White Sox player in that city?
Yeah, look, there's been a lot of great popular players on the north side and on our side, the south side, from Frank Thomas to Mark Burley to you name Paul Konerko. These guys have got, I mean, they've got stars that won't stop shining. You do the same thing on the other side of the town when Sammy Sosa was Mr. Excitement over there and so many other great players. But Tim Anderson's unique. You know, he's social savvy. He likes, you know, he likes to be out there and be different and have fun. He is definitely a guy that wants to be a modern day flip the bat, smile and laugh a lot ball player. And also he's feisty. You know, he'll take exception if you throw inside on him. He's not afraid to talk smack to the pitcher after that. So he's a unique combination of modern ball player, but with a twist, because he's also ready to throw some hands if you come charging at him. So I like him. He's got a little old school, but he is very, very unique. You're right. He's a top batter over several years now in Major League Baseball. Nobody really does it like him. It's not something you could teach the way he hits. It's kind of a wristy forearm, snap of the bat, last second attack the ball thing that you just go, that's unique and nobody else can do it. And you enjoy the show. He's our spark plug, and he's our rally keeper. I mean, if you got a rally going, he's going to keep it going. So without him, we're just not as good. Simple as that. You can't really replace his spark that he provides. So when we get him back instantly, we score more runs and we beat a good Blue Jays team.
Yeah, you see the spark instantly. Like you said, he comes in, he has two hits right away. Another guy provided a spark yesterday, and I got to be honest, I'm getting pretty sick of him already. Andrew Vaughn, in four games against the Jays this year, already has, nine hits over four games against the Jays. What does this guy have against Blue Jays pitching? He's facing Kevin Gausman again today, who had a single, double, and home run off of last time. I don't know if this is going to stop anytime soon.
Well, he would like to see you guys stick around for a month or two and get his numbers up, that's for sure. But, yeah, you know, his last home run had been against Gausman until last night. It's gone 3 weeks in between home runs, so something about that bird on that hat kind of sets him off. But he's really a smart hitter. He's probably the most intelligent hitter that we have, and I'm not putting anybody else down. It's just a compliment to how smart and brilliant he is. His approach is, you know, he'll take what guys give him. If they're pitching him away, he'll take singles to right field. If they fall for the trap that they're just going to say, let's sneak one inside on him, well, he'll drive the ball over the fence to center field or left center. He's just got a smart hitting approach, and it's going to lead to a lot of hits, a high batting average. He was considered the top hitting prospect in college when he was there. And there's a reason for that, because he is no dummy when he walks to home plate. He pays attention. He's only 24 years of age. And here's a guy that's already showing as if he's a 35-year-old and been doing this for 15 years, and you can't outthink him. So, yeah, he's fun to watch. And I know the Jays are saying the same thing. They're going, this guy, just walk him. Hit him in the kneecap. Do something different. But he's good for us for sure.
And this is why there's, you know, we started the conversation talking about how the Sox have underperformed a little bit. And then you get Tim Anderson back, who's 29. You're talking about Andrew Vaughn, who's 24. Luis Robert's only not even 25 yet, just about to turn 25. And even guys like Moncada and Jimenez on the IL are still on the good side of 27. And then you look, and the starter tonight is only 26 and is probably a Cy Young candidate so far this year in Dylan Cease. I know he's been around the majors for a bit now. This is, if you include the pandemic shortened season, kind of his fourth go round. What has changed for Dylan Cease to take him from, you know, over the last 2 years being a pretty good pitcher to this year being an ace caliber guy?
maturity. I mean, you mentioned he's young, yes, but he has been around long enough to not panic anymore, not to put extra pressure on himself, not to try too hard. And we have a really good hitting coach in Ethan Katz that kind of can communicate to all of these pitchers in the way that they need to be successful. So the combination of maturity, some veterans that talk to him, teach him to relax, and like a Lance Lynn, and he's just got the best stuff, most dynamic stuff on our team. Simple as that. He's got the best curveball in the strike zone, the best slider in the strike zone, the most explosive fastball. And he's got a changeup that he throws 20 miles an hour slower than his fastball when he chooses to use it. It's just a matter of command for him at times. Sometimes he'll get a little off. He's got high, amount of walks to go with all the strikeouts, 30-some walks and 60-some innings. So that's a little too high for him to continue to be dominant. It leads to him being out of the game usually in the fifth inning. But stuff-wise, maybe the best in the league, definitely the best stuff on the team. And you're right. I mean, the potential to win multiple Cy Young Awards. The minute he starts commanding his strike zone more than he is right now, you basically can say, forget about it. He's not going to give much up anytime he goes out there.
Yeah, it's an interesting battle tonight if he and Gausman are both on. And Gausman's had some up and down of late, but that splitter from Gausman against Cease's slider is the battle of two of the best. You know, you said he throws it for strikes and he still gets swing and miss. Those two pitches are among the best in the AL when it comes to, swing and miss stuff in the zone. So Cease's has been great at the top of the rotation. Lucas Giolito will start tomorrow in the afternoon game. He's taken a bit of a step back this year. Statistically, it's kind of a mixed bag. I dive into the numbers and it's just kind of like everything's kind of all over the place. There's not a common narrative thread to why Giolito's struggling after having a couple really strong seasons. When the game rolls around tomorrow, what is it you're looking for from Giolito early in a start to kind of, hey, it's on today for him?
You know, it's a great question because with Lucas, and you're right, there's been some inconsistency this year to him being successful. It's just, it seems if they get on him early in the game, if an opponent gets on him in the first or second inning, it kind of rattles what his game plan is, and he's trying to adjust. And he doesn't really have multiple options of what he's going to do. It's a lot of fastballs. It's a lot of sliders and changeups. And the sliders really been prevalent this year because the changeup is something teams are looking for now. So he's changed it up enough. Yet still, opponents are figuring out the pattern of what he's working with. I think for him, and when it comes to something like tomorrow, it's he's going to have to go ahead and get ahead early of the batters. George Springer tomorrow, if he's in the lineup, he can't have George Springer set the tone, taking him deeper, hitting a rocket early, and he's working out of the stretch right away. It's got to be that first inning is going to kind of set the tone for him settling in and finding a good rhythm because it comes down to his combination of fastball, changeup. He's going to establish those two. And if he's got the hitters guessing wrong, because you got to look for one, you can't cover his fastball and his changeup. So if he's throwing his fastball and they don't even flinch, he knows, oh, they're looking for the changeup. He'll come back with it again. And they'll go, okay, I didn't swing at that. Then just when you get them to a point to where they're thinking, okay, now I got to get ready for his fastball, he throws a slider because that's the last pitch they're thinking of. They're thinking fastball, changeup. If we see this work with him tomorrow early, then they'll have some problems. He'll settle in and have confidence, and that's when he's really good. It's just when you knock him off his game plan early, he loses a little confidence. He has to work a little harder, and opponents have taken advantage and scored on him early.
Darren, I got to ask you one more just for myself, selfishly. I'm in Chicago this weekend. I'm going to the game on Saturday. Do you have a spot in the ballpark, like a must-hit spot for – you know, I've heard there's some deep fried mac and cheese. I've heard there's a pretty good burger. Where am I going for something to eat during that game?
So what I've heard, and I've not done it because I'm not traveling around during the game, there's a Kaminsky burger that's down toward the right field corner that's supposed to be phenomenal.
Okay. I'll do it. I'll report back to you, Darren. I'll let you know how that goes. Thanks so much for taking the time today. Enjoy tonight's game and tomorrow afternoons. I hope it's a beautiful couple days there. I know it's been hot.
Well, thank you very much, and stop by the booth when you're here at the ballpark.
Oh, I will try to do that. I'll see if they let me up. Darren Jackson, White Sox radio color guy analyst, former Blue Jay, former White Sox, former Cub. Thanks so much for taking the time, Darren. Darren Jackson, White Sox radio color voice. We got Jays White Sox 2 tonight. Darren just kind of gave us a look at Dylan Cease and what's made him so effective this year, and I tell you, if you were ever going to, you know, I know we referenced some StatCast stuff here, the baseball savant.mlb.com stuff. If you were ever going to pick a guy to open up their page and try to teach yourself a little bit about what's going on there, familiarize yourself, Dylan Cease would be among the coolest to do that with, because his fastball and his slider are both such outlier pitches. It's pretty incredible. We'll go into that matchup a little bit more in our second hour, especially once we get the Jays lineup for tonight. We do have a tiny bit of news. I don't know how much stock you put into these things, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr., one player of the week in the American League. He hit .407, three homers, seven RBIs, 1.278 OPS. Vlad has put together a very nice June so far. I know it can not feel like that when they lose a couple to the Yankees and then the White Sox. And in a couple of those games, the bats have been sleepy at the team level. But Vlad's been going pretty good. He's hitting .303 in June. Eight home runs in 19 games. Three doubles as well. And 10 walks to 16 strikeouts. Strikeouts have ticked back up a little bit, but you're okay with that as long as the walks and the power are there. Also 17 RBI during that stretch. So already his, we got a week left here plus in June, and it's already his season high for homers, runs, RBI in a month. Be nice to see Vlad keep that going tonight against Cease. It'd be interesting to see how Cease attacks him, because the one thing that Vlad has not done great with this year and last is the very, very top velocity. I don't know if that's Vlad sitting a little bit more on off-speed stuff. He has been very good against sliders, for example. The Jays as a team have not handled velocity super well, and they faced a ton of it. This was kind of the diagnosis of their extended offensive slump to start the season, is they faced way more velocity than anyone else in baseball. They have the number one offense in the league against all pitches that are under 95 miles an hour, and they fall to the 20s against pitches 95 and up. So I would imagine Dylan Cease relies on that 97-mile-an-hour heater quite a lot today. He throws it 43% of the time anyway. He pretty much goes fastball slider against righties. He throws those two pitches a combined 87% of the time against righties. So get used to it. If you wanted to test out whether the Jays are ready to play against elite velocity, Dylan Cease is the guy to try it out against. We've got someone in the text line. I was just about to push send more texts in 590-590 or tweet at me, Blake Murphy ODC. And someone who didn't sign this, I wish they did, because it's deserved a pat on the back. They say the Frank Kaminsky burger. No, it is the Kaminsky burger. The Frank Kaminsky burger. I wonder if they have that at University of Wisconsin. We're actually going to have Sam Decker on this show next week, a former teammate, or later this week, rather, a former teammate of Frank Kaminsky. I'm going to pass that on to him and ask what he thinks of the idea of a Frank Kaminsky burger. He is, Sam Decker, by the way, is a monster Brewers fan, and he got to know George Springer a little bit when they were both in Houston at the same time. That Kaminsky burger, by the way, two quarter-pound patties, a brioche bun with poppy seeds, two American cheese slices, celery salt, yellow mustard, and Chi-Town Pico. So, I don't know. Pico on a burger is an interesting choice, but if Darren Jackson says you got to go Kaminsky burger, we might have to give it a try. Mike in Burlington asks, do you think Springer is going through a bit of a rough patch? Seems like he's frustrated at the plate. Doesn't look like his timing is right either. I think this is one we spoke about last week a little bit, and the prevailing wisdom was George Springer is the one guy you trust to figure it out. And yes, statistically, he has not been super great of late. Kind of as the team's offense turned around, he cooled off after an extended period where it was basically just him hitting. He has posted a 737 OPS in the month of June, which is low by his standards. It's not bad by any means, but he's got a sub 300 OBP this month. So I'm sure he would agree with you that he hasn't been hitting as well as he would like. I do think the track record there and the approach at the plate, you're not too worried about George Springer big picture. Let's take a break. When we come back, going to talk to Matt Muse, a Chicago area rapper who is a huge White Sox fan. I'm a big fan of his, so I'm really glad we'll get to talk to him. He did some season preview stuff with Spin Magazine about the White Sox. We're gonna see where his confidence level rates at this point in a tough season for the White Sox so far. We'll also talk to Corey Parkin, an Indigenous painter and digital creator who I'm sure you've seen his work mocking up different Blue Jays logos and jersey options for today, National Indigenous Peoples Day, but also in general. He's also partnered with the Argonauts for some stuff. We'll talk to him a little later as well. Next, though, it's Matt Muse on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays have the White Sox again. Jays fans on Twitter didn't seem to like the Southside jerseys as much as I do. I'm going to argue that that's a product of Lance Lynn. And I like Lance Lynn. And you know, I say the following knowing that someone tweeted at me yesterday saying how much I look like Lance Lynn. Vertical stripes, not the best for a thicker person. So maybe it was just a Lance Lynn thing. I think you look at some of the other White Sox and those jerseys are awesome. I love the hat as well. Someone I've seen pull off that jersey very well on his Instagram before, noted White Sox fan and Chicago area rapper, Matt Muse. What's up, man? How are you?
What's up? I am actually great. How are y'all?
I'm good, man. So we played you in with What You Want there. I know you have the single report out with The Mind, and then you've got a new EP called Monochrome coming out this summer. Are you just like waiting for the White Sox to hit a hot streak to drop Monochrome so that everyone associates Monochrome with the White Sox turnaround?
Let's do it. Yeah, that sounds exactly like what I'm doing. Yeah, that's exactly what we need.
I hope it works out that way. There was a time here where Drake dropped an album, Surprise, and the Jays won like 8 in a row or something like that. So when Drake dropped one last week, everyone was like, winning streak, winning streak, winning streak. And then the Yankees came to town. So that killed that really quick.
Oh, word. And then we just beat y'all too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's real.
That's a tough one. We've got to get, I know you're a big basketball guy too. You got to find a way to sample Holy Cannoli on a track somewhere.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like the moment he said that, I immediately tweeted it in like all caps because I couldn't believe he said that on TV, but it was also like, let's go, Holy Cannoli. Let's get it.
I was more surprised by that than if he had said a bunch of swear words that had to get edited after, right? Like someone being that earnest was way funnier.
And you know, what's crazy is he's a fan of a semi-pro, and that sounded like something Jackie Moon would have said. You know, I'm like, Holy Cannoli, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's full circle.
Now, it's one of what it is. It's like, you know how Andre 3000 changes his name a bunch in that movie? Holy Cannoli is like one of his alternate names or something like that.
Literally, yeah, exactly.
So, Matt, in addition to your music, and again, really looking forward to Monochrome, the EP that's out this summer, and people could check you out on Spotify. You're on Twitter at MattMuse12. You're a huge White Sox fan, and I came to know this because Spin hit you up for like a season preview thing, and a friend of mine, Steve Sladkowski from the punk band Pup, was the guy doing the Jays preview. You're doing the White Sox preview, so I was reading through them all. So what is it that's connected you to this team to such a strong degree? Like, how did you become such a big White Sox fan?
Yeah, I'm from the South Side of Chicago, so that's the number one thing. Born and raised on the South Side, I actually still live on the South Side.
So no chance of you ever becoming a Cubs fan when you were growing up. There was just no way.
Well, I'm going to say absolutely not because I love the White Sox, but my father is actually a Cubs fan.
Oh.
A huge Cubs fan, yeah. And so I was just like, why? Like, you know, and then what I learned was that, you know, the there's a lot of Cubs fans, like, nationally because they had the games on WGN. When folks didn't have cable, they could just turn on WGN and watch the Cubs every, you know, the day games. And so I think that's probably how my father became a Cubs fan, because he's definitely from the South Side. But no, I won't be. slipping.
That's good.
But yeah, I think coming off from being a Southsider, and then like when they won the World Series, that was like I was maybe 13 when that happened, and it was just like my family watched the last game together, and it was like I've never seen a Chicago championship because I was too young to remember the Bulls ones, even though I was alive. So this was my first time seeing a Chicago champion, and that just resonated with me, and I've been a fan ever since.
I think that was the experience of a lot of people in Toronto when the Raptors won the championship, because the Jays' last championship is back 92-93. So the 2019 Raptors championship is the first one a lot of people have seen and gone through. I'm curious how you feel about the way the White Sox have kind of marketed themselves over the last little bit. And obviously the roster has just had so many cool players that they're like just one of the most fun teams to watch. But I'm a huge fan of their Southside City Connect jerseys. I know that's been like a divisive jersey, but how do you feel about that alternate?
It's the best one of all of them, in my opinion. And I like it a lot just because it says Southside, like, you know, and there's pride here on the side of town that you're from. Like, that's a huge thing. West side, South side. And I think there's a lot of like, you know, obviously I'm a black person. There's a lot of like other black brown people who are huge White Sox fans. And so you can wear this team that you're so prideful in, but there's also this part of town that you're so prideful in on your chest. And to me, it's just a beautiful jersey. I'm just like, y'all really, really snap. Like, I ran out. I didn't even know that it was out. I just randomly got on Instagram. I followed the team store on Instagram, and the team store posted it. And luckily, at the time, I only lived like 5 minutes from the team store, so I drove over, and I was able to grab two of them before they all sold out.
Who's on the back? Is it Tim Anderson?
Yeah. I got one for me and one for a friend. Both nice. Tim Anderson, yeah.
I had to pay. I'm in Canada, obviously, so the extra shipping and exchange to get one of the hats up here was ridiculous. Uh-huh. But I don't have the ability to just run out and get them.
Grab one, right?
Yeah. So, but I do have one, so I'll be at the game on Saturday watching you guys beat the Orioles in my Southside hat. So
we love it.
It total imposter, but whatever. It's a great hat. I wanted to ask you about Tim Anderson. Obviously, like you said, you kind of joke, like, obviously you're a black person and the South Side, you know, the Chicago, the way Chicago is laid out and the way the city is obvious. To have a face of the franchise and a best player of the franchise who's also a black American player, how meaningful is that to you?
It's huge, man. Like when I tell you, I love it so much. So, like, I've been a baseball fan, like I said, since 05. And, like, 08 was really, really when I got into being a baseball fan and, like, following the White Sox, watching every game. And I had one friend in high school who also, his name is Ladarius. Me and him watched all the games, like, talked about the games in school. But it was so difficult to get other people and my other friends to care about the White Sox or baseball at all. For years. I can count on multiple hands how many times I've been like, you want to go to a game? No. Or you take somebody to a game. I'm not going to like pay attention, but I love, you know, being at the ballpark, which is cool. But I think that once, you know, and I think that a lot of that has to do with that there's a dwindling amount of black Americans, who are starters in Major League Baseball. You know, Adam Jones was playing, the Uptons were playing when I first started watching. Michael Bourne, like, there are so many people I can think of just off the top of my head who were there. CC Sabathia, you know what I'm saying? When I first started watching, and like now you look back 14 years after 08, and I'm like, man, it ain't that many. Tim Anderson and Mookie Betts, you know, are the two that come to mind immediately, but it's not the same. And so to have Tim, you know, being amazing, I think that he's bringing attention to our team. He's bringing attention to baseball, and the White Sox are like always treated like the second team here, but we have the best player in the city. And so I think that's doing so much for, you know, the brand of the White Sox, but also for black youth and black people who care about baseball as well.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's great. Obviously, that representation matters in a lot of different ways. And you know, you guys have the best team in the city too. So maybe as things go, you know, this is kind of the thing, right? Is like you become a White Sox fan in large part because you're from the South Side, but also they win a championship in kind of your formative sports fans years. If anyone's on the fence right now, you know, any young kids.
Definitely going to tap in, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I want to ask you about the White Sox performance so far, because I know you were in that Spin article where they talked to a lot of different people in music about their favorite teams. You are very optimistic. You were saying AL Central, ALCS, maybe even World Series. I know this has been a lot of injury-plagued stuff. Where's your confidence level that they can still turn this around?
I looked at the standings yesterday. It's been a busy summer, so I haven't been able to watch as many games as I want. But I looked at the standings yesterday, and they're only four games back from first place, which to me, if you look at the way they've been playing, you wouldn't think that. And I know that they weren't 4.5 games back just as recently as a couple weeks ago. So they're catching up to Minnesota. I think they're going to win the division. My confidence level is still wavering, because it seems like every time we fix one thing, something else gets messed up, right? And so Lance Lynn, I was watching the game when Michael Kopech got hurt. He's the best pitcher in baseball right now. Then gets hurt right when Lance Lynn comes back. You know what I'm saying? Or like Tim gets hurt. Or Yoan comes back and Tim gets hurt. You know what I'm saying? Eloy gets hurt right when Luis comes back. You know, and it's just that is difficult. And I don't know why they're struggling so much to keep guys on the field. So I would say my confidence, if my confidence was at a 9 out of 10 beginning of the year, it's at about a 7, maybe 6.5. I haven't been a huge fan of the way that they've been, I don't know, the way they've run the team out, the management. And, like, I like Tony Russo, don't get me wrong, but I haven't been a fan of what he's been doing so far. I did not like the amount of lineup changes he was doing game by game. So that had me a little nervous. But people are hitting. Andrew Vaughn is doing amazing. And I think that if they're only 4.5 games back with all the problems that they've had, they will be A-okay. It's June. You know what I'm saying? They'll be fine. Yeah. I think they're going to still win the division.
And you end up in one of, you know, say you don't have one of the top two records and you end up in a 3-game series. I think you like your chances with Cease and Giolito, and if Kopech can get healthy in a series like that. You mentioned Luis Robert. I know he missed 14 or 15 games. He was a guy you were super high on heading into the year. He was like your guy to watch from this team. The results haven't quite been there the way they were last year, but one of the things you mentioned in that Spin piece was you like how he improved his approach, and I've actually seen, and the numbers bear this out, the approach has continued to improve, it looks like, and it kind of feels like the results are just like this guy feels like a hot streak away from being right back to where he was last year.
Yeah, the mistake I made was not saying Tim, because Tim is the best player on the team, and Tim is doing amazing, but... No, like, I'm glad you mentioned the approach thing, because I saw it. I watched almost every game in 2020 and almost every game last year, and I literally saw the difference in the way he's approaching the at-bats and the way he's swinging the bat. Like, he was just hacking in 2020, you know what I'm saying? And then I think the way he changed his swing and he changed his approach is like, oh, no, I'm up here, like, trying to get in that bat in. And even last year, he struck out a lot. I think, like you said it perfectly. I think he's literally just getting the bat on the ball away from – being fine. And even the games this year that he's been good in, he's been great in, you know what I'm saying? And he's so fast. Like, as soon as he's on base, he scores, you know what I'm saying? And so I think that it's more so just a win, not an if, and the win's just taking a little bit longer. But I don't know. You look at Mike Trout, right? Mike Trout has not played winning baseball at all, but he's the best player in baseball. And I see a lot of that in Luis Robert. Like, unfortunately, they didn't win against the Astros last year, but you got all the tools, man. All you got to do is you know, lock in and get it right. And I think he's literally just a second away from that. And he's still young too. So he'll be fine.
Yeah. Big time. And this is the thing I was just talking to. I was just talking to Darren Jackson, the radio color commentator before you came on. And this is the thing is like, you go down some of the White Sox who have either been injured or the guys who have played well while other guys are out, and they're all, everyone important on this team is under 30. And, you know, Tim Anderson's like the old head at 29. I know like Abreu's still in there, Pollock's still in there, but like the young core that you're going to move forward with, they're still so young. So even if it's not this year, you know, good things feel like they're coming for you guys.
Yeah, they'll be fine. I think you like I said, you hit it on the head again. The youth on this team, like the young people who are good, is great. And then you have, like, I remember this. I don't remember what her name is, so forgive me. But there was a sports journalist who tweeted out. She's a journalist for the Dodgers. And she was like, AJ Pollock she like chronicled how White Sox fans are going to respond to him. She was like, the first month they're going to hate him. He's going to start hitting. He's going to get hurt. He's going to start hitting. Then they're going to fall in love with him. And that's exactly what he's done. And I think when you just continue to surround these young people with dope veterans, and then you have a homegrown veteran in Tim Anderson, like, I really, and I meant what I said in the article, like, I was very confident. I think they just have to hit consistently and play small ball more than rely on the long ball, and then their pitchers just have to stay healthy. And I think that if we're able to at least have Kopech, Giolito, and Lynn for the playoffs, and we can put up 5 runs a game, we'll be fine. And I think if not this year, definitely, like you said, within the next 2 years, this team can go to the World Series.
So,
for sure. I strongly believe it.
So we're talking to Matt Muse, who has an EP called Monochrome coming out. I joked off the top that you were just waiting for them to turn it around. But, you know, if this team makes a run, that EP could, you know, that's at least for some people, that'll be the sound of the White Sox run. What can you tell us about the EP and what, you know, what you're excited about for it? What's maybe a little different from what we can already find of yours on Spotify or Apple Music?
Yeah, it's a summer EP, so it's a lot more upbeat. It's a lot of fun. I'm just trying to enjoy myself. The name Monochrome is associated with me showing my true colors through my music, and that's the goal. And so what does it look like to be a lot more honest, a lot more direct? I think that on my last album, which is called Love and Nappiness, it was very honest, but it was like convoluted honesty, like a lot of like saying things in a metaphoric way and in like a way that sounded good to the poet's ear, you know. But I think for this, like, the goal is just to have fun with the music and to say things as blunt and direct as possible, because that's how I am as a person. I'm a very blunt person, very direct, very, very honest. And I want that to reflect in my songs, both with what I'm saying, but also how they feel. I want you to press play and just like have fun with it. Then when you listen to the lyrics, you're like, oh, he's really saying it. And so that's what folks can expect from a new EP. And like Rapport is like a bridge to that. Like Rapport is a very different sound than any other song I've put out. Rapport won't be on that EP, but I'm also trying to like vacate from what folks are used to hearing from me and tap into different like types of hip hop and types of like beats, you know, to reach as many people as possible in their interest, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it and Rapport, like you said. I mean, I haven't heard the EP yet, so I don't know about the exact like transition thing, but it was a nice change of tone and step forward for you. I could tell you were trying some new stuff. One more for you, Matt. From the listeners won't care, but this is a selfish one. I'm in Chicago this weekend. I'm going to the game on Saturday. Do you have a recommendation for me pre or post game in the stadium area or at the game, like a spot like a must hit spot at Guaranteed Rate Field?
Ooh, I'm gonna say something in the area.
Okay,
I'm not gonna say at. I mean, okay, I'll answer both. At Guaranteed Rate, any of the hot dog spots where you can, I will say Guaranteed Rate has the best hot dogs of any MLB ballpark I've been to so far. I've been to seven.
Chicago style is the best way to do a hot dog.
Yeah. So grab you one with the onions and everything on it. I actually went to a game in the Rogers Center, in 2018. I'm also a Blue Jays fan. I don't know if y'all knew that, but
I didn't know that. No.
The 2015 Jose Bautista home run against the Rangers was like one of my favorite baseball moments ever. I have a Blue Jays jersey. I bought one. I come to Toronto every year. I've been there 6 times in the last like 6 years. I love Toronto. But yeah, when you get here, get that. But then around the stadium, go to Harold's Chicken. Get a 6-wing dinner from Harold's Chicken, either the one on State Street. On Michigan, downtown, which is only like 5 to 10 minutes from the ballpark. You will not be disappointed. Harold's Chicken.
Harold's
and then get
Chicken.
You one of the hot dogs in the stadium. Yep.
All right, I'm on it, man. I'm going to do that Saturday. Let me know if you're at the game, and let me know next time you're in Toronto.
If you're going to be there, I might pull up. You know what I'm saying?
Do
we
it.
Might be able to catch it together. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm in the bad seats. Like, I'm way up top, but that's all right. So you can come find me up there. But, yeah, just DM me or whatever. Matt Muse, thanks so much for taking the time today, man. Really looking forward to the new EP. Have a great week.
Hey, thank y'all for having me.
That's Matt Muse at MattMuse12 on Twitter. If you want to give him a follow, he's a fun sports follow, and then you can keep along with his music updates there. A new single, Rapport, featuring The Mind, and EP Monochrome out this summer. We played, you missed it if you were listening, if you're listening on the podcast, but we played his song, What You Want, on the way in as well. Nice to hear from Matt. Nice to hear that kind of intersection of the White Sox branding and the White Sox personality at the player level and how that's interacted with the fan base and the city. I know, too, with the number of Cuban players that the White Sox have, Chicago also has a pretty large Latino population, not quite to the degree of Miami, where they kind of build that into their fan base and marketing. But it's nice to see a team that does such a good job reflecting the fan base around it in a similar way to I think the Jays are mindful of. Maybe the Jays will even adopt one of their fans' pieces of art for an alternate logo, an alternate jersey at some point. I'm sure you've seen it making the rounds with today being National Indigenous Peoples Day. We're going to talk to the artist, Corey Parkin, in a little bit, and then we'll set up the game. We still don't have a Jays lineup for today. We'll get that at some point. It was out by now yesterday. I'm never clear on exactly why they're so inconsistent with the times coming out, but what can you do? We'll keep an eye on that, and even if we don't have a lineup, we'll tee up Dylan Cease against Kevin Gausman in game two of this three-game set. We talked a little bit about Lucas Giolito with Darren Jackson earlier and with Chris Swick from Yahoo Sports yesterday. You can go back and check those interviews out, Blue Jays Talk podcast feed. Lucas Giolito goes tomorrow against Ross Stripling. Tough couple days for the Jays hitters if those pitchers are on, Dylan Cease and Lucas Giolito. By the way, a note while I mention Blue Jays Talk, Sho Ali has you for Jays Talk postgame. Blair and Barker off this week. As you've surely noticed, Sho has you tonight's postgame. I've got you tomorrow for postgame. There's no Jays Talk Plus tomorrow because the Jays play at 2 o'clock. So I'll have you for Jays Talk. I'll be taking your calls. I'll be taking your texts. I'll be nicer to you than Sho. Sho doesn't like your takes sometimes. I'll be nicer about it. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Corey Parkin, painter and digital creator at Indigenize Paints by Parkin on Facebook. Design that killer Jays logo and alternate that you've seen on social media. We'll talk to him about that process and his art next, and then we'll tee up tonight's game on Jays Talk Plus on Sports at 590 The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. You got game two of a three-game set with the White Sox tonight at 8 o'clock, 8:10, first pitch. Ben Wagner on the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Still no Jays lineup. That's okay. It's Kevin Gausman against Dylan Cease. Should be a good challenge for a Blue Jays offense that ranks number one in baseball against pitches below 95 miles an hour and way down at 23 against pitches 95 and up. Dylan Cease, you may know, throws 97 miles an hour, and he throws that fastball over 40% of the time. Before we get into those matchup specifics, and while we wait on a lineup, we're joined now by Corey Parkin, Indigenous painter and digital creator at Indigenize Paints by Parkin on Facebook, and the man whose Jays design you've surely seen on Twitter and Instagram the last couple days. Corey, how are you, man? Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thank you, Blake. I am doing great. Well, thank you just for having me on today.
Yeah, no problem. It's, the timing worked out well. Today is National Indigenous Peoples Day, but I've tweeted out your design there for the Jays a couple times over the last couple weeks because it's such a fun one. Take us through some of the design elements in there and what your process was like creating that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez, where do I start here? I guess just, like, growing up as being, like, an Indigenous artist, I always found that I have family like from coast to coast to coast. So I've always looked up to a lot of different Indigenous artists and cultures and traditions and that. So when I put this logo in particular together, I've just always been fond of like Haida art and the West Coast influences that and their different techniques. So I've done it in the J style in a, like other traditional cultures and that. But for this one, I just chose to do it in the West Coast design with my different shapes and like more techniques that they use. And then for the words, I incorporated because I am Mohawk. And I just always loved the fact that the word Toronto came from the Mohawk word, Dagaranto, that means the place in the water where the trees are standing. And then for the Blue Jay part, our translation to Mohawk is Dairy Dairy. So I used that for the words just as like a tie-in to my culture, but also wanted to really shine the light on West Coast art and just the beauty of it.
It turned out great. I think it's awesome. Not to spoil anything, but have you heard, like, did the Jays reach out to you or anything like that? Have you heard anything on it?
I have not. I've been really fortunate to work with some amazing people. I've worked with some amazing Blue Jays players and a lot of the prospects. I've worked with, like, Manoah and Jansen, and I've kind of always tried to fill that in, like, hey, do you maybe want to fill this out for your bosses? Like, it would just be a dream to work at the Blue Jays, but I have not heard anything yet, but I've had a lot of support from you guys, Sportsnet, sharing it there, so I'm just got my fingers crossed that one day they will reach out to me. Like I said, it would just be a dream.
How cool is it for you as a sports fan when you do get a chance to work with a Manoah or a Jansen? And I know you've done some stuff on the Argos side and maybe the Raptors side in the future. How cool is that for you to see your sports fandom and your art kind of intersect like that?
I always found, like, growing up, there was, and people would know what teams I'm referring to, but there's, like, that proper or improper representation for Indigenous culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I always wanted to find a way to kind of showcase my culture and get, like, the proper recognition, but also, like, really support the team. So, like, you can show that you're Indigenous, but also that you love these teams. So just growing up, like, I've always been, like, that, a huge fan of sports. Like, it's a big part of my life, like, found when I was younger, it was just like, even to have somebody mention something that was Indigenous was like, it just, I would be silent. Like, I wouldn't know what to say. So now the fact that I'm having these teams reach out, these players reach out, like, it's overwhelming, but it's like such an amazing feeling. Like, on the past weekend, I got to meet like my all time favorite Argo, Pinball Clemens. And I felt like the last time I met him, I probably stuttered, probably just basically said photo, and then that was it. So meeting him in person, talking to him about my culture, my family, like, stuff like that, is just, like, it's such an amazing, like, feeling. And it's, like, just to look back, and it's, like, I can't believe that happened. Like, I can't believe that these teams are reaching out, these players working with them, like, having players like Manoah that I've, like, followed, like, since the day one we drafted him, reaching out, saying, like, love your stuff. I really want to get a painting for my mom, and then seeing them support and their family reach out, like, it's just an amazing feeling.
That's awesome. And you mentioned, you know, you get to talk to someone like Pinball Clemens about your culture and your family. Why do you think it is that, and maybe it's the community, maybe it's the engaged audience, but we're able to use sports as such a powerful tool? And you know, not that it should take something like a really cool art design for someone to learn about that stuff, but it is, when you can connect sport to your art and your art is so deeply connected in your culture, why do you think that's such a powerful combination?
Well, I found, like, even through, like the attention that my stuff gets, I try to use my platform to not really tell people how it is, but just start the conversation to really showcase my art and stuff. So having the support of these sports teams reaching out, it's to just to show that like the sport team, the players, the organization want to include Indigenous people. And like a day like today, it's more of just like celebrating Indigenous culture and traditions. And for people that are interested to reach out and like find other artists, like, it's not just with my art. I love the support and love people checking me out, but there are so many amazing Indigenous artists and beaters and crafters and musicians that for people, when they see this art, sometimes they get lost and don't realize that there's so many more great people out there in traditions that now it's allowing the conversation and finding the correct resources for people to find and look into it. But also it's allowing these organizations to do the extra step and sometimes raise money and give back to the communities, because so many Indigenous communities around here that need the help and need the support. So something like that is just amazing.
For sure. And then we see your work popping up in partnerships with the Argonauts or with, you know, I know your Indigenous Peoples Day shirts were available at some Walmarts and things like that. So it's great work you're doing obviously. And then I'm glad that something like this is something that is getting people's attention, especially on a day like this, but any day. It's not as if that design was only getting pushed around the socials today. People like it just because it's awesome. And it's such a nice nod to this country's roots long before it was this country. So again, people could check that out at Paints by Parkin on your Facebook. That's where they can find any of your stuff if they want to purchase or just find out more. Your Instagram as well, and then your Twitter at Paints by Parkin as well. So today is National Indigenous Peoples Day. The Jays are on the road anyway, but you've built all this momentum up with your art and your own reputation. And I know you haven't been doing it all that long, according to your Facebook page. So I'm curious, you know, what's next? What's the next step? What's the next goal? Or what's just the next cool thing that you as a sports fan hope you get to do?
I've always done art. And since I met my beautiful wife, she really inspired me to get back into my creative side and painting and that. But I don't think it was until we were expecting my first child, our first child there, that it made me really touch into my culture. And I've always been a proud Indigenous person, but it made me find that I really wanted to learn and promote as much as I can to really give back and let him know. Because I've always found you really can't be who you're meant to be or go where you're supposed to be until you understand and appreciate where you've come from. So I've tried to really dig into that and just spreading awareness for Indigenous people, because it's without my community and my people across the nation and just all the people that love my art, I wouldn't be at where I am today without them. So it's allowing, with me working with these people and these teams, it's setting up a life that I can give back to my son. So it's just extra motivation. For upcoming stuff, like you said there, it's not just about celebrating today, but just every day being proud of being Indigenous and showcasing the art and that and the cultures and traditions. But yeah, I have some stuff coming up.
I know you can't reveal all of it. I don't want to put you on the spot for that, but I just tease it to let people to know, follow your Instagram at Parkin613, follow your Twitter and Facebook at Paints by Parkin, because there is exciting stuff on the horizon.
Yeah, there's, I've got a lot of good, especially for, Toronto-based teams. There's a lot of good, exciting things coming up. But like I said, my phone's open. If the Blue Jays ever want to get a hold of me, I would love to work with them as well.
Yeah, that's great. Well, appreciate you taking the time. Keep up all the great work from the art perspective, from the awareness perspective. Everything you do, Corey, we really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, we'll go on, though. I appreciate you guys having me on here. It's an amazing opportunity. And just thank you and staff there for reaching out to me for this.
Of course, Corey, we appreciate you taking the time. Again, that's Corey Parkin. You can follow him at Parkin613 and check out all his great art on Instagram, or you can follow Paints by Parkin on Twitter and Facebook. A lot of terrific Indigenous art. He walked us through, some of his motivation, some of his inspiration for some of those pieces. It's really cool to dig into on his Instagram page or his Facebook page. So thanks to Corey for that. And again, happy National Indigenous Peoples Day. The Toronto Blue Jays play in their regular jerseys, unfortunately, but they play the White Sox again tonight, 8 o'clock, 8:10 first pitch. Ben Wagner on the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Still no Jays lineup for you, but we've got a White Sox lineup for you. So let's take a look at that. This is how the White Sox will line up opposite Kevin Gausman. Tim Anderson leads off. Andrew Vaughn hitting second at DH. The game doesn't start for 3.5 hours. He's already got a hit or two, probably. That guy's terrifying. I'm tired of this already. 9 hits in 4 games against the Jays this year, including 3 for a total of 7 bases off Gausman last time he faced him. So he hits second. Luis Robert hits third, plays center. Jose Abreu, AJ Pollock, Adam Engel. Sebi Zavala catches to give our old pal Reese McGuire the day off. Josh Harrison hitting eighth and playing second, and Danny Mendick at third rounds it out. That's how they line up against Gausman. If you look at some of Gausman's historical stuff against the White Sox, he's faced the active group of players 51 times, a 412 expected weighted on base average. That's not very good. But a lot of that sample is older and scattered across a number of guys. Yes, Gausman didn't pitch the best against them, especially Andrew Vaughn last time. But there's nothing too alarming in there in the kind of batter pitcher lines. The White Sox only have an 89 WRC plus against right-handed pitching this year. They've mashed lefties, and that WRC plus stat suggests they've been about 11% below league average at the plate when it comes to facing right-handed pitching. That didn't matter yesterday. Maybe it doesn't matter today, but it's context for you. On the other side, the Jays will face Dylan Cease. He's got a 2.91 ERA. His component metrics are just as strong. He's near the very top percentile in just about everything that's related to quality of contact and missing bats. The only real weakness in his profile is that he can be a little walk prone. We talked about that with Darren Jackson earlier and why that is. And, you know, part of it is he throws a really hard fastball and he throws a slider with a lot of movement on it. And sometimes that's not the easiest to locate. And sometimes also you induce enough swing and misses that you get, I don't know, maybe you get a little confident. You get a little liberal with the stuff out of the zone because you know you can get chases. Against right-handed hitters, Cease will throw almost exclusively fastball slider. It's 87% of his pitches are fastball slider to righties. That fastball comes in at 97 miles an hour. He locates it very well for the most part up in the zone. And by the standards of a four-seam fastball, it generates a lot of swing and miss, as you might expect with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball up in the zone. That slider is also filthy. He'll throw it to both lefties and righties. Throws it 36% of the time overall. He has a 43% whiff rate on it. So when batters swing at it, they swing and miss 43% of the time. It also has a 10-mile-an-hour separation from his fastball. So not only can it change a hitter's readiness in terms of break and location, but also in terms of velocity. Now, he can, if you dive in a little bit to some of the video and some of the release point stuff, he can maybe tip the slider a little bit. He releases it a little bit lower, whereas the fastball, changeup, and curveball all tunnel pretty well. But when the fastball is coming in at 97, I don't know that you... I don't know. I can't hit 97, so I don't know how early you need to be tipped off that it's not a fastball to be able to kind of sit back on a slider that's 10, 11 miles an hour slower. But he does tend to release it just a little bit lower. So keep an eye out for that if the slider is getting hit well. He'll also throw his curveball and his changeup. Those are primarily for left-handed hitters. The Jays won't have too many of those in the lineup today. His curveball has been his worst pitch, and he's all but ditched the sinking fastball he threw. He's thrown at times. I don't know. He sprinkles it in, but maybe it's just a misclassified fastball. He really doesn't throw that sinker enough to warrant talking about it. So you're looking fastball slider, very hard fastball, big movement on the slider against righties, and then against lefties, you'll see some curves and changes as well. If you can identify the curveball as a lefty, that's probably your best bet for hard contact from the left side. The Jays haven't faced Dylan Cease a ton. He didn't come to Toronto last time because he was on the restricted list. Only 31 plate appearances scattered around the lineup. The Jays have a 4.43 expected weighted on base average against him in those 31 plate appearances. That's really good. But this is not a very good offense against 95 plus heat. I mentioned it a couple times throughout the show. The Jays are the number one offense in baseball when pitches are below 95 miles an hour. They're down at 23 against 95 plus, and Cease will throw a lot of stuff 95 plus at them. So we'll see how they bounce back from that. Kevin Biggio, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. have all been pretty good against sliders this year. Maybe you like Biggio to keep his moderate hot streak since being recalled up. Biggio's an interesting one because he doesn't hit the hard stuff very well historically. He's gotten a little better at it this year, and then he hits the slider well. And we mentioned that Cecil mix in a curveball that's not super effective to lefties. So maybe it's another Biggio day. Lourdes Gurriel was off yesterday, so I'd imagine he's back in there anyway, but he has hit sliders well. Vlad's a tough one to peg today because he has hit sliders well, but he doesn't have great numbers against top-end velocity this year. Neither does Bo Bichette. So keep an eye out for that kind of stuff. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Alejandro Kirk are the guys who profile the best against Cease. But again, we're talking small samples when you get into, oh, how do you play against righties who throw 97? There just aren't a lot of starters like that. So that's how things line up. Again, no Jays lineup just yet, but we've got a good handle on Cease. You know most of what the Jays lineup will look like. I'd imagine Gabriel Moreno is back behind the plate catching Gausman today. A few texts in the text line. Reese McGuire or Luke Maley? Personally, Luke Maley. Reese McGuire has hit the ball a little better of late, but what are you going to do? Other nonsense in the text line that I'm not going to read, but you're a jabroni guy. That person knows who I'm talking to. I said earlier I'm doing Jays Talk postgame tomorrow, and I won't be as hard on people as Jays Talk can sometimes be. Maybe, I don't know. You send in that kind of stuff on text, maybe I will be as hard on you. We'll see. That's a reminder, though. Blair and Barker are off this week, so Sho Ali has you postgame tonight for Jays Talk. I'll have it tomorrow. Jays Talk Plus returns Thursday. Last night's game did not go very well. We tried at 3 o'clock. We had Chris Black and Joe Siddle on to diagnose some of what's going on with Jose Berríos. And with Berríos and with Gausman and with Kikuchi, it's been a little more consistent, but Berríos and Gausman have been a little tough to diagnose because the target's moving a little bit. With Berríos, it was, well, the fastball command, and then the fastball velocity was down because he was feeling some dead arm. And then, you know, the fastball location wasn't great to set up his other stuff. And then last night, it's the curveball that gets teed off on, and the White Sox are kind of sitting on it. He has to go away from it a little bit. And then Chris Black provides us the numbers that, yeah, when his curveball isn't there, when it's not breaking well, Berríos has really struggled. Not the most shocking thing in the world that when your best breaking ball isn't breaking right, you struggle, but it is at least a little concerning that the target keeps moving here. He fixed the fastball a little bit, and now the curveball's up. Gausman has dealt with some of the same stuff where the fastball up, splitter down, was either getting tipped or it was just a common enough pattern that the Minnesota Twins were able to get to it. He's been a little up and down since then. There's nothing as strong as to suggest he's tipping, just that he primarily throws two pitches and the location on those can be a little rote. Last time out, Gausman tried to focus a little bit more on getting the fastball down. Whether as a result of that or just a bad command day, he was missing with the splitter a lot. He was getting it. He was missing inside a lot instead of missing down below the zone, which is where he normally misses with that and induces a lot of swing and miss. There is some evidence or some data that points to Gausman having been a little unlucky of late. And I don't mean that to excuse his pitching, because to some degree, you make your own luck. And if you catch a little bit too much of the plate, maybe that won't happen every time out, but if it happens sometimes, it happens sometimes, and you don't get credit for, you know, this is the big difference we always talk about between Fangraphs wins above replacement and Baseball References wins above replacement for pitchers, where Baseball References is what happened and Fangraphs is what would happen if you replay that out in a neutral environment, free of luck and defense over and over again. Gausman has had rough defense behind him, disproportionately so, relative to how the Jays defense has been overall. Chapman and Espinal are obviously plus at their position. Bo and Vlad have been mostly fine at theirs. But -9 outs above average when Gausman's on the hill. Part of that is, again, as we talked to Chris Black and Joe Siddle about earlier in the show, the Jays shift really heavily, and Kevin Gausman has been the one starter who opponents are able to beat the shift against. Maybe that's random, but maybe the fastball splitter combination, and Joe Siddle laid out some really good points about, as a batter, how you'd approach Kevin Gausman, where maybe you end up poking stuff the opposite way, whether by intent or not. So maybe it's something the Jays need to revisit a little bit with the shifts. Keep an eye out tonight how the Jays line up behind Gausman defensively, because that'll tell us, well, I'm sure they notice it. They notice everything with data, anything that we're bringing up, they surely notice and are accounting for, but we'll see what their appetite is for continuing with that because the data suggests, at least in the sample so far, and especially the recent sample, that the Jays should maybe shift less aggressively when Kevin Gausman is on the mound. By the way, I read that White Sox lineup out a couple of minutes ago. It has now disappeared. So I don't know if they're making a change to that or something, but they took it down. So maybe don't lock in that White Sox lineup that I read a little earlier. Oh, no, they put it back up. Okay. FanGraphs having some issues on us. That's all. Again, Tim Anderson, public enemy number one, Andrew Vaughn, Luis Robert, Jose Abreu, AJ Pollock, Adam Engel, Sebi Zavala, Josh Harrison, Danny Mendick is the lineup for the White Sox. They'll go against Kevin Gausman, Dylan Cease on the mound. Am I stalling a tiny bit with 3 minutes left in the show to see if the Jays will give us a lineup in time? Maybe just a tad, because I don't want to send you out without the Jays lineup. Having said that, Sho Ali has you pregame 7 to 8. If you really are in need of that lineup and you don't have social media or another way to check it, Sho has you covered 7 to 8 pregame. It's Ennis and Brunt next for drive time. Again, Sho Ali doing great work on Jays Talk pre and post. So keep an ear out for that. It feels like a big game. The Jays dropped 2 to the Yankees. We can take it back further than that. They squandered the opportunity against the Orioles, and I know the Orioles aren't a terrible team, but to only take 2 of 4 against them is at least a little disappointing, especially with the blowout loss to end that one. They get blown out by the Yankees on the Friday. They can't score any runs on the Saturday, and Alek Manoah doesn't have his best start. And then they have this big comeback, and maybe you feel like that's going to build to something, and then you immediately get down big to the White Sox in game one of that series, and the comeback comes up short. Maybe you feel like the bats just can't come back that frequently to that big a degree. Maybe it's just a random day, and those 4 games scattered over a 5-game stretch is just unfortunate. But it feels like rounding this out and taking this one and probably tomorrow too against the Sox is kind of important. They're off Thursday, and that's their last off day for a while. They've got that big weekend with a 5-game set against the Rays ahead. They are not going to get much easier on the schedule. You've got the Red Sox ahead, who are now playing at the same level as you on the season. They've really turned things around. We'll see how that holds up as their schedule gets more difficult this next month. But they've been really good too. And you can't assume the Rays are going to stumble for too long. So it does feel like this is a pretty big, if not game tonight, a pretty big rest of the series for the Jays to get something out of this and feel like that 14-4 stretch against primarily the AL Central and the Orioles wasn't just a product of lesser competition, and you're not really a 500 team that can just steal some against lesser teams. The market is confident in the Jays tonight, not super confident. They're -130 at the White Sox, over under set at 9. Gausman and Cease, that feels a little high, but this is also a ballpark that plays pretty offensively. And you saw how the bats can get going yesterday. This White Sox team, I know they haven't hit right-handed pitching well, but they can hit. And you see that yesterday. You see that with Tim Anderson back in the lineup. You see that with Andrew Vaughn killing the Jays. It's frustrating. So we're not going to get a Jays lineup for you before we go here. You can check your socials for that, but you can also tune in at 6. Or sorry, at 7 rather, for Jays pregame with Sho Ali. Again, no Blair and Barker, no Jays Talk postgame from them. Sho has you covered. I'll be on that tomorrow because the Jays play at 2:00. So no Jays Talk Plus tomorrow, no Raptor Sho with me tomorrow, but I'll have you for Jays Talk postgame, and then Jays Talk Plus returns Thursday. Thank you for listening. Thanks for subscribing and all that great stuff. Thank you to Chris Black, Joe Siddle. I almost read my Raptors guests. Darren Jackson, Matt Muse, and Corey Parkin for guessing. Thanks to JR and Derek behind the glass. 8:10, first pitch. Ben Wagner on the call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. This has been Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.